No ADNs by 2020 on this week's Insights in Nursing. Welcome back to another episode of Insights in Nursing. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I am back with an action-packed panel today. We've got quite a full panel, six of us on the call today, but we've got a full discussion ahead of us on a very important topic. The Institute of Medicine in October 2010 came out with their report on the future of nursing, leading change and advancing health. And I'm excited to be covering this topic, and I have to give credit where credit is due. This is largely thanks to an idea sent forward a couple of weeks ago by Lori Shaunley that we should do a discussion on what this report means to nurses and the future of nursing. And it's a good time to do that. Here we are at the end of 2010, looking forward, as we often do this time of year, towards the coming year. Some of these recommendations are going to be implemented sooner than others, but certainly all of these things are going to be looked at more carefully and beginnings of implementation started in 2011, hopefully. So before we get any further into that discussion, let me go ahead and introduce our panelists. First of all, Lori Shaunley from correctionalnurse.net. And Lori, thanks so much again for coming on the show and for bringing up this topic this week.
Well, thanks, Jamie. I'm really excited to discuss this with my nurse colleagues from so many different fields and to see what everyone's thoughts are. This is an important paper that's come out, and the goals, I think, will move forward, as you said, into 2011 and onward.
And definitely, and it is quite a broad panel. We've got a lot of people from a lot of different areas of nursing and from different parts of not just the United States, because we also have Rob Fraser coming back to join us. Rob's a nurse in Toronto, Canada, and really is has a lot of focus on just the social media aspects and technology aspects of nursing as we move forward and integrate those things. And Rob, it's great to have you on the show to share your perspective, because certainly, even though this is a U.S. report, it's going to have effects on nursing care worldwide.
Absolutely, Jamie. It's a pleasure to be here. And kind of full disclosure, I guess I'd probably put myself around, I'm a new grad, so it's an interesting perspective to be at, but my kind of working technologies allowed me to work with a lot of kind of senior leaders in nursing and healthcare. So it's kind of really neat to see where the kind of strategy and the focus of the future of the profession is kind of going. And a lot of my interest has to do with technology and how that's shaping the way that we interact. And it's so much fun to be able to kind of sit down and talk with a group of nurses, not just kind of on the unit, but from across the kind of continent. It's really kind of a great opportunity. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem, Rob. And I appreciate your full disclosure, but I you've been around healthcare for a while, and certainly your understanding is not that of your what I would consider our typical new nurse. So it's really great to have you here on the show. Terry Schmidt is back joining us again. Terry from Nurses Story, I think it's nursesstory.com. Is that correct, Terry?
Yeah, nursestory.com.
Nursestory.com. Make sure I said it right. But Terry, you're a nurse practitioner in Missouri and have been on the last couple of episodes. Last week, I think, was your first show. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm still a newbie.
Still a newbie here. Well, don't be shy. Hopefully, we'll be able to all jump in. It's going to be a lot of fun to have this discussion. And I'm really glad to have you here, because a lot of the discussion in this episode or the Institute really focuses on advanced education for nurses and on advanced practice nursing in some aspects. So I'm looking forward to your input there.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here and glad to talk about this subject. It's near and dear to my heart.
And we have another Terry on the show, Terry Pollack from nurseratchetsplace.com. And Terry is involved in, psychiatric nursing background and works at an undisclosed government hospital. So Terry, welcome back to Insights Nursing. We've missed you the last couple of weeks. I know you've been working a lot, so it's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. I missed you too, guys.
And last and certainly not least, Kim McAllister from the Emerge blog, an emergency emergency department nurse in the San Francisco Bay Area. And Kim, glad to have you here. Did you work last night? And you're just kind of groggily listening to us?
I did not work last night, so I am awake. Whether I am coherent or not is another story, but I can guarantee you that I am indeed awake this week.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Kim, and it's good to have you here as always. And you didn't sleep through the day's call, so.
Nope, I did not.
I'm going to jump on in and just talk a little bit about the Institute of Medicine report. And to do that, I want to start off by talking about the Institute of Medicine, because a lot of people maybe don't know what that is. They might think it's a government agency or some other semblance I don't know what they might think. So let's go ahead and look at it. First of all, you can find out more about them yourself at IOM.edu. So Institute of Medicine is at IOM.edu. And they are an independent, and this is from their website, an independent nonprofit organization that works outside of government to provide unbiased and authoritative advice to decision makers and the public. It was established back in 1970 as one of the health arm of the National Academy of Sciences. And so while the National Academy of Sciences has been around for a long time, I think President Abraham Lincoln chartered that organization. It is expanded into other national academies to include sciences, engineering, research, and also the Institute of Medicine. So while it's put together and organized under congressional government mandate, it operates outside of the government and purports to provide an unbiased look at the healthcare of the United States. Their purpose is to be an advisor to this nation to improve overall health. And so we're going to look, one of the things that they looked at this past year, over the last 2 years, has been where nursing is going as the debate over healthcare change. And healthcare reform has come about. It has been recognized, and appropriately so, that nursing is going to figure very prominently in any reform and should continue to figure prominently. And Lori, you brought this up as a topic first, so I'm going to give you the opportunity to just give me an overview of what your just initial thoughts are on why this report's so important and why nurses need to be aware of what it's saying.
Wow. Well, you know, as you said, nursing is a significant part of healthcare, in fact, the largest segment of healthcare workforce. So if we're talking really across the nation about reforming healthcare, what better than to look at the future of nursing, where nursing plays a role in that, and also just where nursing is going as we move forward into this next decade. And I really think that the report is significant for a couple reasons. As you mentioned, this is an independent group, and if you look at the makeup of the board, we have some significant people who were a part of the process. They used a huge fact-finding gathering process over the course of 2 years. It's really a culmination of a couple of years of work. They had a lot of activity, different focus groups and sessions, and they worked with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on this. And so the information that they bring forward and the key messages, I think, are significant for us to talk about and really provide maybe some descriptive information to our listeners so that they too can be thinking about how this applies to their own work, as well as what they can do and be a part of moving nursing into the future.
I really agree, Lori. And one of the things that we're going to do is try to move through some of the key recommendations that are listed in the report and at least highlight some of the things that we think are important and what some of the challenges might be to implement these recommendations. First and foremost, and this is something that has come up repeatedly, is nurses practicing to the full extent of their education and training. And this has to do with the various ways nurses operate in advanced practice, in normal practice and advanced practice under different scopes of practice and nurse practice acts in different parts of the country, and trying to bring some kind of uniformity to how nurses are allowed to operate under the extent of their training. We've talked about this, I think last week or the week before. I think it was last week we talked about it with regard to a discussion, an editorial from the Journal of Family Practice, where a physician said we need to stop fighting with the nurse practitioners and start working collaboratively to take care of our patients. And he cites this report as one of the things that really points out the need for allowing nurses to practice fully. You know, Terry Schmidt, we have you on. You're a nurse practitioner and an educator. This is certainly a very key part and one of the challenges for nurses in many different settings. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I think so. And not just for nurses, you know, the ultimate goal that we all have is patient outcomes. And so that has to be our focus. And yes, I live in an area of the country that has not been using nurse practitioners to its fullest extent. And we're still battling things like insurance and prescriptive privileges in the state of Missouri. And so I was very pleased with the suggestions from the IOM. You know, the last report they made 10 years ago with the To Err Is Human report revolutionized how we pass medications in the state of Missouri, in the United States and in my own area. And so I'm looking to see that this will change legislation and help nursing meet those patient needs through changing state regulations and legislation. It's some place that the nursing groups have not been as effective in lobbying as they should be.
Why do you think that nurses just aren't vocal about these types of things? One of the things I really got a sense of during the healthcare reform debate, Terry, was that there didn't seem to be any kind of unified nursing voice to assist in bringing our goals for better patient outcomes and collaborative care into that picture. Did I miss something? Was there something going on back channel? It just seemed like there was something missing there.
You bring up an excellent point, Jamie. I could talk about this all day, but I think that there's two answers to the question you're asking. Number one is I think nurses are just too darn busy. We are working. We are busy seeing patients. We are coming in extra. We are working the night shift. We are working Christmas. We are working New Year's Eve. And we very rarely have time to even look up from our work. And I think we see all patients equally. So when we look at a patient, we don't look at them by their insurance status or their ability to pay, but we just treat them all. And so I think that's removed us somewhat from this discussion because we just see whoever comes into our path and we work very hard. But the other thing that really did happen with healthcare reform, and it's the first time I've seen it, is that nurses actually were brought into the conversation, at least for the first time in Washington. For so many of the healthcare discussions previous to the last 2 years, we have been absent, and the ANA was asked to be front and center and some of the other. And although our voice wasn't as big as I hoped it would be, at least we were at the table because there are other healthcare professions that have felt that they could speak for all of us all the time in the past and just make blanket statements about healthcare. And so this will really call for partnership.
Just kind of jumping in to speak about that point of fragmentation, I think in the section of the report, it really talks about the varying kind of preparation and roles of nurses. And I think that's been one of the kind of big challenges. And I like this part that's talking about making sure that nurses can practice to the full scope of their license. I absolutely am really behind that. And I think one of the challenges that sometimes we create for ourselves is my understanding, at least, is the U.S. hasn't standardized entry to practice for registered nurses, whereas other than the access, sorry, but in Canada, I think it was about 10 years ago, they made it a minimum standard for the baccalaureate of education. And look at all kind of different statuses of nurses that we have. I think in at least the Canadian organizations that I'm aware of, there's a lot of kind of fragmentation between the what we call practical nurses, licensed practical nurses, registered practical nurses, and the actual registered nurses kind of classification. And then it's interesting because instead of there being a bit of a unified voice at that kind of level, there's often kind of a lot of fragmentation at the professional association level. And I think that's one of the reasons that I see sometimes the nursing voice is a bit underrepresented, but it is great that it is kind of finally being kind of a bit more unified and recognized at the kind of large strategic planning levels that Terry mentioned.
Jamie, if I could jump in too, I think part of the reason that nurses aren't more politically active is that when they do try to become active, they don't feel that they're being taken seriously. I know quite a few nurses with 2-year degrees that feel that they are being totally marginalized by some of the nursing leadership, such as the ANA, who want all nurses, according to this report, number four, point number four, by 2020, 80% of the nurses to have baccalaureates. So when they do try to promote an agenda, I think a lot of times that they find themselves just being cut off at the knees by their own leadership. So I think there are a lot of people trying to legislate change and become active, but they're just not getting the support or the publicity that they need.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was referring to. And I think it's kind of a little bit sad when I see, as a kind of someone coming in with really fresh eyes to this, that sometimes that kind of lack of respect from nursing leadership for these nurses coming out of programs that are really concerned about their patients have legitimate points and a need to be kind of listened to. But even within nursing, they're not kind of getting that kind of respect from their colleagues. And then nurses, we kind of turn around and then complain that the medical establishment isn't respecting our developing role and our emerging kind of skill set in the positions like nurse practitioners, DNPs, and things like that. But yet we're kind of turning around and doing the same thing within our profession, which is something that I've always been a little bit disheartened by, but I'm hoping that will be kind of worked on in the future, because one of my kind of passions is the Canadian Nursing Students Association. And it's great to see that at least at the student level, we have a kind of organization that actually includes all levels kind of at equality, and everyone's kind of participating towards it rather than kind of saying, well, we're registered nurses and you guys should have your own kind of separate kind of nursing voice. It's a lot more kind of collaborative.
It's, you know, the fact that they mention that nurses should practice to the full extent of their education and training, first of all, it just makes sense. You have a group of professionals already educated, already out there, already in the field and ready to go to provide the a level of patient care that they're not being allowed to provide. And the need is there. There are some states that are not allowing them to practice to their full extent, and this is a wasted resource. You know, we talk about, you know, accessibility of healthcare and patient outcomes, and we see it. And finally, it's been seen that, wait a minute, we already have a resource in place that we're not utilizing. And there needs to be some pressure put on the states that aren't as progressive in their use of advanced practice nurses to get these nurses practicing the way they were educated to practice and to utilize this underutilized resource, get them up and running like they should be up and running. That's just common sense. Then in terms of the education level, by 2020, to have 80% of the RNs be bachelor's degree prepared, if that's what they want, then they really need to start looking at why we are still pouring out, at least in California, thousands and thousands and thousands of associate degree prepared nurses still. So that goes to the second point here, where it says nurses should achieve higher levels of education and training through an improved education system that promotes seamless academic progression. I'm not against associate degree nursing as an entry level. I was one for 30 years. But you need to be able to have, when they say seamless education system, literally, you should be able to be a registered nurse and begin your practice at the associate level should you choose to, but then immediately be able to continue on and get that bachelor's degree and have it be expected that you'll have it. I mean, if that's what they want, within, say, the next, I don't know what's reasonable, 4 to 5 years, and that eventually you will have that baccalaureate degree. But if they're going to do that, there needs to be an incentive to get it. There needs to be a financial incentive. Right now, I have my bachelor's now. If I went on to get my master's degree, there's no increase in pay. There's no increase in responsibility if I stayed in my current position at the bedside. I would be better prepared to care for patients. I think if I was a master's prepared nurse, I see a difference in how I care for patients, not necessarily physically, what's the word I'm looking for? Not didactically. I see a difference in my knowledge base in how I care for patients personally now that I have my bachelor's degree. But they need to make it to where it's easy to do that, so that you can easily go on and get a higher degree. If that's what nursing management or the nursing hierarchy, if that's what they want, then they need to start doing it now. 2020 is in 10 years. And yet California, we are full of junior colleges that are pouring student nurses out with associate degrees. So
Can I jump in on this? Stop it. Just stop it. Kim's got a very good point. I'm not against continuing education. The more education, the better we all are. But I have a friend that I work with, brand new graduate. She is $60,000 in debt for her nursing education. She was fortunate in that she was able to access funding. As our government starts going down the tubes financially, I really see that there's going to be less money available for education. So it's all well and good to have this goal of, 10 years from now, 80% of the nurses need to have a baccalaureate. Government needs to put their money where their mouth is. How are these kids going to get through school if they don't have the funding?
Well, and to be fair, this isn't government talking. This is a recommendation from an independent organization to both the private and the public sector. And I should point out that we're talking about recommendations. In the report makes specific points for where these recommendations need to be implemented. The first recommendation, removing scope of practice barriers, they spell out what needs to happen at the congressional level, at the state legislatural level, at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, personnel management, and Federal Trade Commission and antitrust. And that was one of the more interesting points. I'm interested to hear, Terry Schmidt might want to comment on this one. The Federal Trade Commission was brought into this with the aspect of that the physician organizations restricting access to certain levels of patient care could be considered an antitrust act, anti-competitive act for healthcare. And I found that very interesting. It's the first time I've ever seen that spelled out that way. And yet it makes perfect sense that this is that you could see it from that aspect, that they are restricting free or fair trade practices from the medical provision healthcare arena. Terry, what are your comments on that?
Yes, I love this conversation. This is just wonderful. But I have to say that I think there's some grounds for that from my perspective. And just to be clear, healthcare is a huge revenue generator, as is education. Both of those things are businesses. And so their job is to make money and to employ people. But when you are restricting the practice of some who are capable of doing things, that may fall into the grounds of antitrust laws. And so I think it'll be interesting. They're basically sending a warning that, you know, you need to play on the team and play nice, or we're going to hit you where it hurts.
I especially liked that the recommendations from the IOM address modifying the hospital participation requirements in the Medicare program to ensure that advanced practice RNs are eligible for clinical privileges. I think if we can have the CMS as and then following that lead will be the insurance companies in advocating and desiring and requiring that advanced practice registered nurses have clinical privileges, admitting privileges, and are approved for such things as admission assessments and certification for patients in home health care, those types of things, then I think that's going to move the advanced practice RN into the spheres that there have been fences placed up, boundaries placed up prior that have been keeping them from doing those things.
I think that's a good point, Lori, and I'm glad you brought it up, that the financial barriers, that may be the place to start, and particularly with insurance companies as well. Blue Cross Blue Shield just recently made a big statement that they would now finally accept nurse practitioners as providers and start paying them accordingly. And so when that happens, it does open up the amount of patients we can see and who we have access to.
One of the other things that they talked about in part of the educational process was not just advanced degree education. Of course, that goal to move from 50% to 80% in 10 years is certainly ambitious, and I wonder if it's realistic. But certainly, it's going to take many steps to do that. But they didn't just focus on degree-oriented education. One of the things I liked was the inclusion of a recommendation to implement nurse residency programs to provide a way for nurses to transition to practice from their educational process to an actual practice program. And I think that's very important to allow for nurses to not be just, I think we lose a lot of new nurses who get shocked by being thrown in the deep end because there's a shortage and there's not enough opportunities for them to be appropriately oriented and trained before they're just cut loose with patient care.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kim.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think there's always been, back in the 70s, it was called reality shock. You know, the difference of between practice and how you were educated, and that first, oh my God, you know, what did I get myself into period. But I think as patient care has become more complex, even with nurse-patient ratios, there is such a steep learning curve with nowadays when you start your practice, a residency makes so much sense for nursing, and it should be implemented. I think that's a wonderful way to ease your way in to patient care, having more and more and more responsibilities, to be expected, I think, to graduate, and then the next week you are taking a full load and being expected to, nowadays, to just dive in and go for it. It just doesn't make sense to me these days.
Well, I'm glad to see this trend now, because when the baccalaureate program started taking full steam, my complaint was I'm seeing kids come out of the programs that really didn't have your real world everyday kind of clinical skills that were going to keep them afloat on a unit. And I would see all these really bright kids just leave the profession pulling their hair out going, I can't take this. You know, I came from a 3-year diploma program. We worked on the unit, we attended classes, and our clinical wasn't Oh, you go to a med-surg floor for 4 weeks, for 2 hours a day, something like they have now. We went 3 to 4 days a week, 8 hour shifts in between our classes. And originally I had been told by baccalaureate people, well, the idea is to give them the theory and then put them on the floor and they'll learn the hands-on stuff as they practice what they learned in the classroom. Well, like I said, I'm glad to see that this trend is now starting to reverse, because for years I said this is crazy, and this is the main reason why a lot of our very brightest and most brilliant students left the profession.
Terry, I think you bring up a good point, and I want to say what happened in those transition nursing schools from those diploma programs, which were owned by hospitals, into college-based associate degree programs, is that the Higher Learning Commission and the NLN have some very strict criteria about how many clinical hours can be provided based on, say, an hour of class content. So if you had a 4 hour class and it was all clinical, you can only do 45 hours of clinical for each 1 hour, because what was happening was oftentimes they were using students for all kinds of other things. And so when that regulation came about, it greatly decreased the number of clinical hours actually that the students were on the floor. So as being a diploma person, yeah, we had a lot more, because there were no specific standards for what is a clinical hour. And that holds across the board, whether they're a physical therapy student or a pharmacist student or whatever. And so I think these residency programs are an excellent idea, number one, because it does give them some time with some support to continue learning. We would never send a medical student out right after graduation and just say, hey, go for it, without some residency time. And their residency is really to support and to grow them and let them learn and specialize and decide where they want to be. And I think this will be wonderful if the hospitals will take off with it and really support these nurses who have families to raise and have student loan to pay back, if we can get this pulled off.
Well, I think one thing that they might want to look at is the military has programs in place for young junior officer nurses who want to specialize in certain areas. They are taken from their, as new graduates, they are given mentorship. I don't know that it's exactly like a residency program, but we have some of the best and brightest nurses serving in the military today, and it's strictly because of the type of support that they get working within the military system.
Yeah, they really work on them succeeding, and really support them. And I think it's an excellent model. Incidentally, those nurses, I think RNs have to have a bachelor's degree now to enter, but man, they really make sure that they succeed and they know what they need to know, because in times of crisis, they don't want to leave them by themselves.
And also, the military does provide an opportunity for, they have LPN schools within the military system. Many LPNs start out within that system, but the ones who want to advance are given every opportunity to pursue a career and are given support to go back to school while they're serving their country, get their degrees, and work within these specific systems or these specific specialties that they want to get into. Again, it's a model that maybe the private sector should look into.
I'm just going to jump in here and stop me if I go on for too long. I've just been kind of trying to find a graphic. I shared the link with Jamie, but I know, and the group, so hopefully anyone who's listening to this can check it out on the website. But the Canadian Nurses Association did an interesting kind of 2020 look forward about kind of where nursing needs to go a few years ago. And they put an interesting kind of model about the transitions of kind of nursing practice level along with the kind of education. I think that's one of the things that really worried me about looking at this Future of Nursing report, is that recommendation number four, increase the proportion of nurses with a baccalaureate degree to 80% by 2020. I just really didn't like how it wasn't specific about what type of nurses really kind of need that. And again, that kind of lack of respect or kind of valuing the position of the what we call the practical nurse in Canada, or what it might be called in the States. I'm not sure what the correct term is. Someone else can hopefully provide that. But really kind of looking at how we can get those balances, because even in Canada, I know there were universities that after you do 2 years of your degree, you could write the practice examination, and actually during your summers, you could work as that practical nurse and not just kind of a student nurse that wasn't allowed to do anything. You could practice at the full scope of a practical nurse. So rather than just kind of taking a kind of care aide or some other unrelated summer job, you could actually start getting your nursing practice in. And I think that's like sometimes a really kind of undervalued position. And especially for student debt load, I think it's nicer if you can work in a role that's preparing you to become a more skilled and more experienced nurse, prevent that full kind of practicing on your own transition shock, because you've worked with kind of a bit of a patient load yourself and developed some of the really kind of basic fundamental assessment and practice experience, and then hopefully use that knowledge and experience to be able to also collaborate with them. Because I think sometimes even nurses, registered nurses, have trouble working with practical nurses because they don't fully understand their scope of practice. Are they allowed to deal with pick lines? Can they give this type of medication? What do I really need to supervise? And part of that, I think, is becoming a bit more profound, because registered nurses like myself are going straight into the RN role. So we don't necessarily get full coverage of how to best kind of collaborate with them. But now they're starting to work that into the kind of curriculum. And also, when looking at that model, there's a really kind of good transition role, because I think that is important, the kind of higher education. But I really think we need to value those kinds of types of role. And just kind of quickly commenting before I go on too long about the residency programs, I think it's really, really good that we're starting to look at these. And I want to make sure that we consider them more broadly, because I know in Ontario, there's what we call the new graduate program. So the government will give hospitals incentives to provide full 6 month training and education to new nurses, so they can actually practice on their floor with a mentor and do that kind of stuff, if the hospital is willing to give them a full-time job for a year afterwards. And those are really neat, but I think we need to remember that there's more than just the new grad nurse. There's the kind of mid-career nurse that's interested in a change, because I think a public health nurse that's been working in a really kind of specific role, transitioning to an acute care role somewhere else, is going to have just as many kind of anxiety issues, worries about kind of learning those clinical skills that they haven't been using. So the kind of mid-career nurse, as well as the international nurse, because we see a lot of kind of influx of these nurses coming from different countries with different practice standards. So even providing these types of residency programs or kind of practice based, really through the unit kind of setting about where nurses are going to practice, providing that type of education to support that type of transition, I think are really great ways that we can keep people, not just new grads from leaving with depression, but people kind of in different places, provide them more opportunities to transition to other roles within nursing, and not lose them to outside kind of jobs, and provide the career support to do that.
Thanks, Rob. And I completely agree. I think there needs to be support at across all aspects of the nursing education process. And that includes people shifting gears in the middle of their nursing career to go in a different direction or learn some different aspect of nursing care. I want to move away from education a little bit and talk about some of the other recommendations, because they didn't just focus on the needs for more nurses or the needs for more or better trained nurses or higher trained nurses in the system. They also focused on how nurses would be involved in the system and in decision making. And one of the most exciting things that I looked at were the set of recommendations that brought together the idea that nurses needed to be partners with other healthcare professionals, physicians, and other parts of the healthcare system in redesigning the healthcare system here in the U.S. And this really focuses on promoting leadership within the nursing profession. And I like the one quote they had in the briefing here, that they wanted leaders within the nursing profession from the front lines of care to the boardroom. And I think that that is so important that they focused on the fact that nurses are, yes, they're on the front line of care. When you think nurse, you think of that floor nurse. You know, most of the lay people out there, when they think about a nurse, they think about that nurse on the floor in the hospital in a med-surg area. But there are public health nurses. There are nurses in industrial safety planning. And, I mean, we could just go on down the list here. But they need to be there. Do we see that progression where we have more nurses in the boardroom setting, that we aren't just looking at our hospital and facility leadership and it's dominated by physicians?
I definitely know that at least in Canada, there's a lot of kind of nursing leadership. One of my kind of questions or kind of hopes is seeing myself as an emerging leader, and I definitely want to stay in practice for a while once I kind of finish my education that I'm in right now. But I know there's a lot of kind of challenges keeping your foot in clinical practice, because I know there's a lot of kind of leadership from nurses, but when they go towards a kind of research career track or administrative career track, they're often forced to kind of give up their clinical roles in a lot of kind of aspects. So they're not able to keep that balance. Whereas I think that's something that's really, really important for nurses. And advocating for ourselves is really important, but unless we have the kind of patient experience, the kind of clinical care setting really at the heart of it, I think we lose a lot of the kind of most valuable things that we provide to the healthcare system. So I know that in the nursing leaders that I kind of really admire, that's one thing that I'd really like to see, is the ability for nurses to step into leadership roles, but also to keep, maybe even if it's only a couple days a month, but somewhat in touch with that kind of clinical population and that kind of experience of what it is to be a kind of direct care provider.
One of the things I'd see that, and that, again, the report outlines this, is that this doesn't mean that we're going to be given positions because the report asks them to be given. It does say that we are full partners, and it requires the nurses to take responsibility on our own for identifying problems and on our own for how that is implemented and brought into the system as full partners within that system. Kim, do you see that progressing? I mean, in some ways, we've been talking about this type of thing for a while here on the Insights panels over the weeks, but it is something that needs to be continued and increased.
Absolutely. Nurses tend not to be very vocal. And I mean, there are segments of nursing that are very vocal, but we tend to not historically have been there and put our voices in. So yeah, we have to, they're recommending that nurses have to take the responsibility and say, we want to be in, we are equal partners. We want to be in the discussion. We want to be a part of the dialogue. And frankly, nursing has a voice and a view of healthcare that nobody else really has. Each discipline has a unique viewpoint and brings a unique aspect to the table. So we have to step up as a profession. And as Rob was pointing out, we do tend to be fragmented. And I think that we need to kind of pull together as best as we can and try to present as a united voice as we can and be a part of the dialogue.
Absolutely. And going back to, I think it was Terry Schmidt that was talking, correct me if I'm wrong about the kind of attribution, but was talking about the fact that a lot of time nurses don't have the time because of the amount of clinical demand that is on our time. I know someone that was away for a weekend at this conference, for a 3-day conference, they were called over 5 times by their unit who knew that they were away. So I'm not sure why they're doing that, but calling them 5 times to pick up shifts. And I think for me, at least talking about that kind of nurses getting involved in more leadership, I think part of that is also changing the kind of culture of the way of what nurses are able to do. And my 2 big things as a student that always kind of gave me hope, or I thought of as the future of nursing, was it's called the 80-20 research that was being done at the University Health Network, which is one of Canada's biggest kind of hospital networks in Toronto. And that was giving nurses 20% of their time to work on personal development or unit-based kind of projects. So they were doing their master's, upgrading education, taking on quality improvement projects. And the cost that were attributed for doing that kind of paid time off the unit were actually resulted in cost savings, and it balanced out for what they were costing in sick time, absenteeism, and things like that. Because all the nurses stopped calling in sick, they actually had a huge demand to work on that unit because of the kind of program, and it allowed nurses to actually develop and improve the kind of culture that were going on there. And the other thing that I've heard about is the research advancing practice, which is taking clinical nurses with every level of education, so that's the two-year college programs or baccalaureate, and getting them institutional support. So within the hospital, providing them support to do research about their patients and their clients. So it takes these group of 40 nurses at this particular hospital through a program that allowed them to kind of work on patient-driven kind of research. And it really shifted the kind of way that nurses thought and were able to advocate for the patients to investigate those things that they're having a problem. One of the examples that I always think about is the dialysis unit nurses. They always struggle because their patients are often thirsty, but you can't exactly give the more liquids because that's one of the problems that they're facing. So they were able to do this great kind of clinical research about ways that you could deal with that. And they found that by giving patients sugar pills, they could quench their thirst. But it was really neat to see nurses able to actually answer clinical problems. And it was really bringing in the patient voice. And it changed the way that those nurses thought about themselves as researchers, as advocates for patients. And they were able to kind of voice their concerns. So I'm not sure if anyone else has seen things, but what do you guys think are the ways that nursing is going to develop that voice with that ability to kind of advocate better?
Rob, I really think that's a great idea, that 80-20. I'd like to look into that further. That sounds like a great way to help develop some of these competencies that they talk about here in order for nurses to be full partners. There are leadership competencies that need to be developed, and being able to effectively speak and write and to present positions in order to be at the table to deal with health policy. And I think that might be some of the things that, or one of the reasons why they're advocating for advanced education. I know in teaching in an RN to BSN program, those are probably really the areas, the competency development that goes on, going from an associate degree to a bachelor's degree. And Kim, you might chime in with maybe some of your experiences in that. I came from an associate degree program as well. And moving into the baccalaureate degree and the higher graduate levels, a lot of it has to do with those leadership skills and the ability to be able to effectively write and speak.
Absolutely. It made, I don't know how well I'm speaking today, but it made a huge difference. And it wasn't necessarily that my patient care, my practice was different. I had a coworker say it this way. She said, your practice won't necessarily be affected because you're already practicing at a high level. She said, it'll be the way you think about the way you practice. And she was right. I see things differently. I think about things differently. I have a different perspective on the whole healthcare system with my BSN preparation. And I think it makes me a more well-rounded practitioner having the bachelor's degree. And that's with 30 years as an ADN. And I've only been a BSN now for 6 months. But it makes a difference.
That's really true, and I think it also helps to give the nurse the confidence to speak their mind and the position that we have, because we do, as was mentioned earlier, we do have a different worldview, a different perspective based on our clinical practice and the focus and the goals of our profession, and yet we still need the confidence to speak that mind at the table along with the other professionals.
Yeah, and it wasn't something that I had developed, it wasn't something that I had been exposed to in my associate degree program back in the Jurassic period, but it wasn't something that was focused on back then. It was something that was highly focused on in my bachelor's program, and you just get you come out with a lot more confidence in. And knowing your place in the healthcare system and knowing basically having more of an idea about what you can accomplish.
Absolutely.
Terry Schmidt, you're a BS BSN educator, BSer, no, a BSN educator. Tell me. Oh, sorry.
I'm not going to take that personally, Jamie.
No,
Bang.
Please don't. I can just tell everyone, if you haven't listened to my voice, you can probably tell I'm a little bit out of it on cold medication, but we'll keep going. Terry, tell me a little bit about your perspective on the change you see in your students when you have nurses that are advancing to the BSN level, because I think I have a BA prior to my nursing degree, and so I am an ADN nurse with a bachelor's degree. I see the benefit of my bachelor's degree education all the time in what I do with nursing. And I wonder, you know, what your thoughts are about nurses who move from that ADN into the BSN program and graduate.
Oh, my. Again, I could talk for hours about this subject, but I get so excited. I get these nurses in, and I'm an old diploma grad and went back and got my bachelor's degree. And I love working with these nurses because they're already professionals. They're already out there in the thick of it. But I see a couple things with them. Number one is to get a bachelor's degree, then we well-round those people in things like history, and they have to take English Comp 2. And they come to me as an advisor rolling their eyes. I do not need to take English Comp 2. I do not need to take a history class. But then they come out of those classes being so much more well-rounded to be able to discuss things, to see how their nursing practice affects politics, affects the history of the country, and how their ability to write affects whether they can make proposals. But they also get so excited. We put them in these classes, and I teach a leadership class, their leadership and administration, and most of them are like, I will never be an administrator when they enter the class. And they have to do a change, evidence-based change paper, where they come up with a change they want to do in their unit, and they have to budget it. They have to find the evidence behind it. They have to talk about the climate and the culture and how they'll present it. And a lot of those students then write that change paper and then go on and present it and make real changes in their unit. And they get so excited about that. And of course, then their managers are just thrilled to death because someone else has helped take the workload off of them for developing and changing things. But they become great communicators and they get so excited about what they're doing. And they really do leave the program. You know, my associate degree in nurses, if I gave them a patient, they would say, okay, check the vital signs, and I put the patient in high Fowler's, and I put some oxygen on them, and I made sure that they were stable and their lips are pink. But my bachelor's degree student would say, I made sure that this patient who was Muslim, that their family was appropriately in the room, and we assessed their health care in relation to what they wanted as far as treatment, and I also involved, all of these different services. And so it really does take on a life of its own. And I love it. It's so exciting to be a part of that.
Go ahead, Rob. Big fan. And just to kind of what we're talking about kind of in the chat is I really, really like all this kind of talk about that kind of increasing the way that we critically think, the way that we're able to communicate, the way that we're able to kind of solve problems and develop evidence. And I just always and this is because actually my mentor, the person who brought me into nursing, she's the head of the Registered Practical Nurses Association of Ontario. So she comes from that ADN kind of equivalent, or what we call the Registered Practical Nurses. And they're really, really valuable. And I think we have to remember that in these conversations to really make sure that we kind of value that type of role and then explain how it kind of develops. But I think in healthcare, we really need people to kind of value that patient providing care, the actual hands-on bedside nursing. And I think a lot of that is being done by these levels of care, and there's a huge range of kind of critical acuity of patients, and we need all levels of kind of nursing. So just to make sure that we're always kind of voicing that the value or that kind of balance of that, how everyone kind of fits in and plays a different kind of role. And yes, it's beneficial, but even though it'd be great if we could all do our PhDs and be bedside nurses, it's well, not going to really happen. So how about you, everyone in that kind of picture?
And I think, Rob, you know, it's hard to translate all of these certifications across international boundaries because, here in the U.S., a practical nurse program is very different or somewhat different from a registered nurse program, that even at the ADN level. And so it's hard to – I don't know how well they translate. It would really be interesting to compare scopes of practice. terminal degrees as far as a PhD or a DNP, Doctor of Nursing Practice, is a great goal for some people, but it's not going to be something that every nurse is going to ultimately reach for. And we need to make sure that the nursing profession has openings and opportunities along the way. But we also need to make sure that their leadership opportunities are there and that they're included in the process for patient health care and collaborative care. And I think that's what this Future of Nursing report really is all about, is looking at the collaborative efforts to provide for better patient outcomes. It talks about how nurses are an important voice to be included at every point of the process to advance and improve healthcare and the overall health of the population here in the U.S. And I think that that's why it's very important for all of us to continue to be vocal about this process. And, you know, it's funny, Terry, every time I ask you a question, Terry Schmidt, you say I could talk about this for hours. I'm looking forward to bringing some of these topics up more in depth in future episodes here on Insights in Nursing and inviting you and others to come on and broaden these discussions, because I think it's so important to continue this discussion. You know, we're doing this show on the Institute of Medicine report for the Future of Nursing, but this is a single discussion that is going to be continued in parts throughout the course of this show, many other programs, through blogs that nurses and others are writing, because it really is a broader effort than we could ever discuss here on the show. You know, we're getting down towards the end of our allotted hour, and I want to give each of you an opportunity to share a final thought on what you'd like to see. We have, you know, 8 key recommendations that are outlined here in the report, 4 broad areas that the recommendation under which the recommendations fall. And so I would like to just get an idea from each of you what you pull from this report as you read it, as just an aspect of the future of nursing, whether something that you are excited about seeing advancing or perhaps are concerned about whether or not nurses are going to accept the responsibility to pull and move forward in these ways. Because there are 2 edges to these recommendations. One says nurses are going to have more responsibility, but that means nurses are going to need to take more responsibility. So there's 2 parts to that. Kim, why don't we start with you and get an idea of, when you look at this report as a whole, what leaps out at you is the one thing you are taking away from it?
I'm excited about the education component and concerned about the ramifications of the education component, whether or not it's an actually doable thing. I mean, we've been talking about the BSN as the standard for the 30 years that I know of, and I've seen articles stating that we should be all getting BSNs that were written in the 40s. I actually have an article written in the 40s that stated that. So, you know, whether or not we'll ever be able to do that and come together on that, I don't know. But I'm excited about the idea of a seamless education system, and I'm all for that. And so I'm excited about that. That's jumped out at me.
Great. Terry Pollack, why don't we bring you in next and see what your thoughts are? What leaps out at you, Terry, that you'd like to leave as your final thoughts on what you pulled from this brief look at this report?
I think at first blush, it looks exciting, and who doesn't want to advance nursing? However, I think that there were quite a few nursing voices that may have been left out when these recommendations were made. I'm still concerned that a great many nurses with the 2-year degree perhaps would be marginalized by this. I also think that the people who have made these recommendations aren't the ones that aren't people who represent the majority of nurses that are practicing today. To increase the baccalaureate program, to get more people into the baccalaureate program, it's going to cost a lot of money. And that's something that's just not available right now, either through public or private sectors. So, I mean, it looks good, but like Kim said, we've been yakking about this since the 1940s, and I just don't think that the current climate would really promote something like this right now. On the thing with the nurse practitioners, I think Kim really hit the nail on the head when she said that we have people out there today in nursing with the capability of providing services to the underserved populations that can't get into doctors. And states are blocking them from practicing either because the politicians don't really understand what nurses can offer, or I think in some cases there's active lobbying going on behind the scenes that are just trying to keep nurses, quote, in their place. So I would like to see more focus on that.
Great, Terry. Thanks a lot. On to our other Terry, Terry Schmidt. What are your thoughts?
I'm going to agree. I think the call for seamless education transition, I watch my students struggle with that. They just have so many responsibilities and their workplaces aren't supportive. And in my own experience with the many nursing degrees I seem to go back to school for again and again, but it's just too difficult at this point in time even to make doctorally prepared nurses. And so I'm looking forward to however this rolls out, that it will be easier for nurses to continue on with their education and thus improve patient care outcomes.
Rob, any final thoughts from north of the border there in Canada?
Well, I think I definitely echo what a lot of the comments that have been made have already kind of touched on from the scopes of practice, from the nurse practitioners right down to the ADNs, whether it's drawing from lines or discharging patients. I think we really need to kind of maximize the knowledge and skills and the competencies that are there within nursing. I really like the kind of the push at the front end, and I think we just need to kind of from here really kind of develop the kind of patient care focus, because I think one of the voice that seems kind of left out to me, or at least in this publication, is that sometimes the real focus on the kind of patient delivery care, who's going to be kind of doing that, and it seems like there's a lot of focus on the overall professional leadership and all that kind of stuff. But I think the more we can really kind of focus on how we interact with patients, what we're doing with the patients, and how we're really going to kind of improve health within any context, is really, really important for nursing moving forward.
And I want to wrap up here. I think it's appropriate that we left Lori's comments to last, because Lori, we really had this discussion today because you brought it up as a topic for an entire episode. And hopefully maybe we can revisit this a few months down the road, 6 months or so, and say, looking back, has anything improved? Have we seen at least the implementation or the process moving towards implementation of some of these changes? But Lori, you brought this topic up initially, and what are your thoughts as you have listened to the discussion today and are looking forward?
Jamie, I think you're absolutely right. These four key points, key messages from the IOM report, we're going to see the threads of that throughout our conversations on Insights in Nursing as we move forward into the next year. And so we'll be able to really see how the recommendations are being implemented. I agree with all my colleagues on the call as far as some of the important points we discussed. And I just want to add that fourth key message that we didn't discuss, but I think it has great importance from the IOM, and that has to do with the better data collection and improved information infrastructure. And I think that with the IOM's report recommending that, it adds strength to the need for a better infrastructure and will therefore help to provide resources in order to improve the data collection and the infrastructure that we have for information, so we can really see how nursing does impact patient outcomes. It can add a lot of weight to nursing leadership, and certainly the collection and analysis of the workforce data is greatly needed. Just as an aside, in my specialty of correctional nursing, the data collected on our workforce is non-existent. We're in some kind of other category. We're not listed with the Bureau of Labor Statistics in any meaningful way, and I'm hoping that with some better collection and differentiation of the data, it will also help within the particular specialty that I'm working and advocating for.
Well, Lori, thanks again for coming together on this. And, you know, I would point out that, yeah, we didn't get to talk about workforce planning policy and better data collection, improving our information infrastructure. We just didn't get to that point, but we could certainly jump in on that. We have to say goodbye to Terry Schmidt. So, Terry, I want to thank you for coming on the call. I know you have to leave. So you can find more from Terry at Online Nursing on Twitter, so at Online Nursing, and also her blog, nursestory.com. And we'll have Terry here on again on the show again in the future, and we'll have links to her sites on the show notes. So thanks a lot for joining us, Terry. We're going to close out here. I do want to bring up one thing as my final thought, and it kind of came up. We have a little chat room going on in the midst of our discussions here to share thoughts with each other. My final thoughts are this, that we can continue to be part of this discussion as nurses. And I know a lot of you listening to this maybe are involved in social media in nursing. So you've been picking up insights in nursing as a result of being friends with one of or more of us on Twitter or readers of our blogs or perhaps blog authors yourselves. And I would encourage you to all begin to plan that next fall you're going to try to join us at Blog World and participate in the social health track discussions that we had. It was very exciting. It would be even more exciting if there were more nurses involved in the discussions there. And I think that I speak for Lori and Kim and Terry Pollack, that's just a great way for us to continue the discussion. And one of the most important things we did there as a group from physicians and nurses and patient bloggers and the industry representatives that were there was that we really all were focusing our attention on the fact that we wanted to improve patient outcomes. We wanted to really remain focused on the ultimate end result of everything we do in the healthcare arena, which is improve health. And Kim, would you? I know you would agree, but just you know, any thoughts as far as Blog World next year? I know it's not scheduled yet, so we can't give anybody any dates, but it is exciting.
Oh, it is absolutely exciting. I can't even describe how. It's like plugging, it's like the energy is unbelievable. You leave there with so many ideas, and it's like you said, you've got nurses, doctors, patients, pharmacists, industry, all in the same room. And you realize as we're all talking that everybody's on the same page. We're all focused on patient. The patients and patient outcomes. Everything we do is focused on that. And this year's whiteboard discussion was just amazing. And it's the first whiteboard discussion that I'd ever participated in. And my jaw just dropped. It was the energy in that room and the ideas that were flowing was just amazing. The whole conference, the whole Blog World conference is good, but the social health was really special this year. It was very good.
It is so awesome that Johnson & Johnson is supporting social media and social networking for the nursing profession and of course medical and patients. It's a wonderful bonus.
Very much so. It was very nice this year.
Now, speaking of bonuses, Kim, We actually have a bonus for the listeners here on Insights in Nursing. Kim, you got the opportunity or were sent some NCLEX preparatory materials for those that are listening to the show that may be getting ready to take their nursing boards. So we have something to give away. And here's how I thought we'd do it. I'm going to have Kim explain what specifically she has, and then I'm going to give everyone an email address. And I'll just randomly choose from the people that email following my instructions later in a few seconds. And I'll randomly choose someone to give this away to. So let's go ahead, Kim, and tell them what are we giving away this week?
This is courtesy of Pearson Education, and it is one of their comprehensive exam prep manuals. And when I say comprehensive, this thing is huge. It's about 1,000 pages. Pardon me. God, Jamie, I'm sounding like you. It comes with a CD-ROM. It's got 4 comprehensive practice tests, and the CD-ROM has an interactive computer adaptive test engine in it, which means I guess it's interactive like the actual NCLEX is. I'm way before the NCLEX, so I'm not sure how those work. But this thing is dramatically large. And like I said, it's from the folks at Pearson Education, and occasionally they send me some goodies. And this is really nice. So whoever wins it, I will ship it to them.
So here's how we're going to do this. You can send an email to, listen carefully, insightsinnursing@gmail.com. Okay, that'll come right to me. And you want to put NCLEX in the subject line and then your contact information. Now, I will not share that with anyone else. It's coming straight to me. I'm not going to sell it or anything. But the person, what I'll basically do is take all of the ones that come in and I will go through and just use a random number generator to select them based on their order of appearance. And we'll give folks 1 week to get their things in, and then we'll go ahead and so this will be 1 week after it's released on Friday. This episode will be released on Friday the 17th. So you'll have a week to get that in until Friday, Christmas Eve, the 24th of December. And I will go ahead and on Friday morning, first thing Eastern time, I will go ahead and pick among the people who've emailed, and I will send that to Kim, and she'll go ahead and forward the information to you. So make sure you include a valid mailing address, and we'll go ahead and include that. I know Rob needs to take off, and he left us, so I will just go ahead and on behalf of Rob Fraser, you can find him on Twitter at rdjfraser.com, rdjfraser on Twitter, so at rdjfraser. And what's his, does anybody remember his URL? I'll have to pull that out here and add a link in the show notes. So we will add that in the show notes. So definitely head over to insightsinnursing.com for the show notes and link over to Rob's URL. Before we lose everybody, because I know we've run long today, Lori, where can folks find more about you?
Well, I blog at correctionalnurse.net, and I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Lori Shonley.
Great. And Terry Pollack, where can we find you?
NurseRatchetsPlace.com, and I'm also on NursingLink.com.
Yeah, NursingLink.com. We'll actually have your, I provide links to your latest articles. So if you have an article you've sent in recently and you'd like to send me that link, please do so.
Okay.
And also, Kim McAllister, where can we find you?
I'm at emergyblog.com, and on Twitter, I'm also emergyblog.
Great. And again, if you want to be in the running to have Kim send you that NCLEX prep set from Pearson, you can go ahead and send that email into insightsinnursing@gmail.com. Put NCLEX in the subject line and your contact information, including a valid email of valid mailing address, and we'll select that a week from the release of this episode. I'm Jamie Davis. You can find me over in my nursing program at nursingshow.com. of course, also via insightsinnursing.com and over at the ProMed Network, where I have some other programs, along with all the other great shows over there at ProMedNetwork.com. Check it out. A lot of great shows in a variety of the different areas of healthcare, and certainly you'll be able to find something over there to listen to that will intrigue you throughout the course of the week between listening to Insights in Nursing episodes. Of course, don't forget, you can find links to all the stuff we discussed today, links to the specific downloads of the PDF files from the Future of Nursing report and briefing, also links directly to the IOM site, and links to the sites of all of our podcasters. So join our panel again next week. We'll be back in trying to provide you some of the insights to what's going on in nursing. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe, and especially take care of yourself a little bit alongside of taking care of your patients during this holiday season. Take care.